And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Monday as we kickstart another week with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, our reactions to the NFL draft. Can we come up with some winners and losers? And why the real winners and losers may not actually be in the NFL. Plus, when it comes to these quarterbacks, will any of them actually work out? We'll talk about the Panthers draft and the Falcons draft throughout the afternoon with those who cover the team. Also, which one of these teams in the NBA playoffs should be on upset alert here in the second round? The NFL draft became a debacle over the weekend. I got all sorts of takeaways from the weekend in Las Vegas. With the NFL draft. One draftee made quite the promise that I don't know if he'll be able to hold up his end of the bargain on. And we'll break down all sorts of things. Baseball, stop messing with the baseballs. We got to get to that too. Plenty to do over the next few hours. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Radio Charleston. You can always email the show, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Monday, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing great. What a great weekend. The NFL draft wrapping up. A lot of surprises I'm sure you will dive into over the next 3 hours. Good weekend of NBA basketball. Yeah. Wish we had some on Saturday, but it was all good. Got some good games last night, in the afternoon, excuse me. But a great weekend overall. Luke, glad to be here with you on this Monday.
Yeah, good to be here on a Monday with plenty to do. Let's talk about the NFL draft. We'll spend plenty of time breaking it all down throughout the afternoon. You come away from the NFL draft, and it's easy to come in on a Monday and do draft grades and winners and losers. But it's harder to really know. What we should be doing is maybe grade the draft from about 4 years ago. Right? That's what you should do. Instead of coming in and giving draft grades today, let's go and look back and see, okay, now that we've had 3-4 years of samples, let's actually give a proper grade to past drafts. Because we never truly know. I say the same thing about the awards or preseason rankings in college football. These watch lists in college football, it'd be like giving out awards to movies without actually seeing them based off of just maybe the trailer, expectations. You saw the trailer and you think like, and we do that, right? You may make a determination about, I don't really care to see that movie. It doesn't look very good based off the trailer. But then sometimes you go, you watch the movie, and you're surprised. And it turns out that, wow, I didn't think I would like this. This was actually a really good movie. And vice versa. Wow, the trailer made this look really good. Instead, it's 2 hours of nothingness. All the interesting stuff was the 90 seconds of the trailer. You never really know until you go through it. And it's the same idea with the draft, where we could sit here and we could come up with our best guesses, just like when you watch that trailer. Right? You think, oh, this team had a pretty good draft, but we don't know. From a few years from now, somebody must have really liked in this draft is going to be lousy, and vice versa. We all mock the Patriots for taking Cole Strange. Maybe he turns into a Hall of Famer. We have no idea how things work out. Now, with that said, here was Mel Kiper on SportsCenter on ESPN and Todd McShay as well, giving their winners the drafts that they like the most coming out of this weekend. Oh, one sec. We'll grab it in a second. And I think most people, we're all kind of on the same page. I think the Ravens, the Jets, those seem to be the two big winners, and Mel Kiper and McShay also seem to be in agreement.
Baltimore Ravens. I'm not a homer on this one, guys. I think a lot of people are going to agree with me on the Ravens. Eric DaCosta, outstanding GM, did a heck of a job. They had 6 fourth-round picks, but they got off to a phenomenal start in round one, seeing Kyle Hamilton slide down to where they're picking near the middle of the first round. An outstanding safety, unique talent, and Tyler Linderbaum, who's been anchoring this line for 10 to 12 years. Remember Marshall Yonde out of Iowa, kind of the third-round future Hall of Famer? Linderbaum, short arms. Is it going to matter? No. They could afford to go after David Ojabo. He's going to be a great pass rusher. If he has the red shirt, so be it. They needed depth at corner. They got it. They got the best punter in the draft in Jordan Stout, and they got a corner to give them the depth at that position that they need. Tyler Beatty in the sixth round was a heck of a pick. From start to finish, Eric DaCosta did one whale of a job. Baltimore Ravens fans should be ecstatic right now.
Yeah, and the Jets GM, Joe Douglas, began his career as a Baltimore Ravens scout and kind of carried over the same principles. Stay home, get value, target players. He got the best cornerback in this class in Sauce Gardner when he sat at number four. The best wide receiver, in my opinion, in this class, Garrett Wilson out of Ohio State. Then they see Jermaine Johnson, the fourth best edge rusher on my board, and a guy we all thought could go in the top 15. He's creeping all the way down in the mid-20s. Joe goes with all the extra picks he had and goes gets Jermaine Johnson. Then he brings in Breece Hall as a really good counterpart to Michael Carter. And then even late, Michael Clements, really good player coming out of Texas A&M in the fourth round. I thought Joe Douglas and the Jets killed it.
McShay and Kiper's takeaways of who had the best weekend. And I think most people would agree that, yeah, it was the Ravens and the Jets that did the best this weekend on paper. On the flip side, I would scratch my head about the Cardinals' plan. The Patriots' drafts always seem weird, but you trust Bill Belichick. As a Minnesota Vikings fan, I really did not like what they did at all this past weekend. But you never know. Things may work out. Right? If you go and you look back at 3 years ago, the best players of the draft were not first-round picks, Deebo Samuel and A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf. Think of some of the better quarterbacks. Russell Wilson went in the fourth round. Tom Brady obviously was a sixth-rounder, and that's an extreme outlier, but you get the idea. Dak Prescott was a fourth-round pick. Who knew that at that draft time, actually, these are going to be the best quarterbacks? We just truly don't know. So it's not fair to really assign grades. What we can do is try to assess the process, which is why many scratch their heads about the Patriots. Why are you taking these guys when you are? But maybe they have a plan. Maybe they know something that even we don't. But I thought what Mel Kiper said off the beginning, or at the very beginning of that clip, is the most important thing or most telling. As he said, the Ravens had the best draft. Part of the credit, or part of his reasoning, was because they have a really good GM. And maybe that's what we should base our perception off of. That even when a pick seems like a head-scratcher, like maybe from New England, you give the benefit of the doubt to those who have performed well over the years. In the first round, when everybody was going wide receivers, the Chiefs went defensive back, right? And also got a pass rusher. And the Bills got a defensive back. And there are certain teams that just know what they're doing. The Steelers. Kevin Colbert just retired after this draft. Always has done a really good job drafting. You may think Kenny Pickett in the first round, he's not the best quarterback, and maybe he won't be. But there are certain GMs or just organizations that have earned the benefit of the doubt over the years. And so as we sit here and wonder, like, what are they thinking? Instead of looking at maybe the pick or the fit, look more at the GM and the resume that they have built. And there are just certain teams, like the Ravens. Every year we talk about the Ravens had a really good draft. And the Ravens this year, right, took a safety and a center. Didn't take a quarterback, didn't take a wide receiver, some of the sexy positions. They traded away one of their wide receivers, and you may be wondering, what are they doing? Even the Titans trading away A.J. Brown. I really like John Robinson, their GM. I think he's done a really good job building this team. Consider that they were just a number one seed in the AFC. They've made the playoffs 4 straight years, and they're doing it with Ryan Tannehill. I think John Robinson has done a pretty good job. First-time head coach Mike Vrabel. Right, so that's worked out pretty well. So as you sit there and you wonder, what are they doing getting rid of A.J. Brown? I'll give the benefit of the doubt to a good GM with a proven track record. For the Chiefs, teams like the Bills, the Packers. Did the Packers take a wide receiver in the first round this year? No, but they haven't in 20 years. And whether it's because of Aaron Rodgers or their scouting department, they've always found pretty good value at the wide receiver position in the second and the third round. There are certain teams that just always do a good job. And so we can criticize or critique or wonder every year, like, what are they doing? But instead of trying to focus on the player they took or when they took him or the fit, maybe we should look back on the resumes and the job they've done over the years. Because there are certain organizations that always seem to do a good job in the draft in the NFL. The same organizations that are usually pretty consistent and competitive year after year. Other teams, like my Minnesota Vikings, kind of spin their wheels a little bit. Even with a new GM this year, the new boss seemed a lot like the old boss. I'm wondering, what are we doing around here? There are certain teams that deserve the benefit of the doubt, and others that maybe haven't earned it. But we have to give it time to find, to wait and see who turns out to actually be the best players in this draft. That's when you look at it from the NFL perspective. When we look at it from a college perspective, I think you can already give out winners and losers from the college ranks. Because you really don't care how the players do so much. I mean, we would hold it against Alabama or certain schools that the quarterbacks don't do very well. But from a recruiting standpoint, yes, it makes things even better for those coaches. But just as long as their guys get drafted. And they could go sit in that living room and say, hey, we just put 15 guys in the NFL. You want to come play for us? Doesn't matter that only a third of them actually had good NFL careers. That's on the players. That's on the teams they go to. But we'll get you there. And if you come to our school, we'll put you in the NFL. The rest is up to you. But well, at least we'll help you get there. We put these number of guys in the NFL draft year after year after year. So when you look at the colleges that had a big-time weekend, of course, just from a conference perspective, the SEC, once again, led all college football in terms of players drafted for the 16th straight year. No surprise. But that was really boosted by Georgia. Five first-round picks and 15 players drafted. A new record for one school in one draft. 15 Georgia players were drafted over the weekend. Consider that when Kirby Smart first got there, the first draft class, the first draft, after Kirby Smart's first year at Georgia, they had one player drafted, and he went in the fifth round. Now fast forward 5 years later, 15 players in the draft, most in the country. It was quite the weekend for Georgia. And what's interesting is that we talk about these coaching trees. Bill Belichick's coaching tree has not been very good, but his GM tree has been pretty good. John Robinson, who I just mentioned in Tennessee, came from New England. I like the job he's doing. The GM in Tampa, right? There's a lot of Belichick guys throughout the league running different teams. And they've had success over the years. Those have been the guys that have been more successful. Because maybe Belichick works closer with them on the draft board than he does with his coaches on even game planning. I don't know. But I look at Nick Saban and the coaches that have developed from his coaching tree and the job they've done, developing talent and putting said talent in the NFL. Maybe they don't win national championships in college football, though Kirby Smart now has. But a lot of these coaches produce really good talent. All right, look at the job by Mel Tucker. Jimbo Fisher's put plenty of guys in the NFL. Kirby Smart just put 15 guys. They know how to bring in talent, develop those guys, and send them off to the NFL. The other big winner from the college ranks over the weekend would be Cincinnati. Cincinnati put 9 guys in the NFL draft, and they're not a Power 5 school. Now, they lost their quarterback. They lost 9 players. You could be concerned now of what the follow-up is going to be this year for Cincinnati. But they had the third most players go into the draft. More players drafted from Cincinnati than Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, or Oklahoma. Pretty good for Luke Fickell and that school that is not in the Power 5. Right, that carries a lot of weight for a program like Cincinnati to have the third most players. It shows the job done by Luke Fickell, bringing in that talent and then developing it. If you look at some of the losers from the college ranks over the weekend that had a tough weekend, there's a few. You can focus on Texas. How about the fact that Texas did not have a single player drafted? Fourth time ever that Texas did not put a single player in the draft. They had 5 guys drafted a year ago. This year, none. First time that's happened since 2014. Prior to that, you have to go back to the 30s. I have no idea what the draft was like in 1938, but I can tell you no Texas players were selected. But for Texas, since 2014, this is the fourth time they've had fewer than 2 players drafted. This year they had 0. There were 7 other schools in the state of Texas that had a player drafted. Texas, the Longhorns, were not one of them. And consider the fact that they had a top 5 recruiting class in 2018, 2019, and a top 10 recruiting class in 2020. Those are the players that should be going into the NFL now, and they're not. Haven't been developed. Meanwhile, other schools that did have a draft pick include Air Force, Fordham, Kansas, Missouri State, Samford, Southern Utah, Yale, Valdosta State, and Fayetteville State, which I've never heard of. I think their coach was the one rambling on while trying to make a pick Saturday. We'll get to that later on. Bad weekend for Texas and Steve Sarkisian's crew, or really the crew before him, unable to put anybody in the NFL draft this year. And lastly, some bragging rights for South Carolina. I saw a lot of this going around, but the Gamecocks with more players drafted than Clemson this weekend as well. That's a nice little feather in the cap. I also saw that a South Carolina State player was drafted before those two schools. That's also pretty good. We don't know how things are going to work out for these NFL teams, but we already know for the college teams. For the college teams, you just have to get the kids there. Then your job is done. The rest is on the players and the NFL teams they go to. And when you look back on this draft, programs like Georgia obviously had a huge weekend. Cincinnati. Texas, not so much. Clemson, not as good of a draft as they have had in years past. Right, even in Alabama, not as good of a draft as they usually have. When it comes to the NFL, though, refrain from draft grades because we just truly don't know. The best picks usually are not in the first round. They're usually not who you expect, who you think they're going to be, and we usually have to give it some time to find out. You may see that movie trailer and think, eh, doesn't really interest me. Just like you saw that draft over the weekend and thought, eh, that wasn't really good. That team didn't do a great job. Then 4 years later, you realize, actually, that tight end was a lot better than I thought. And that safety, oh, what a huge impact he's had. And that quarterback, what a steal. Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady. Even a Kirk Cousins was a fourth-round pick, still starting. Not for the team that drafted him, but still a starting quarterback in the NFL. Just like that movie, you watch the trailer or you hear about the idea, and the idea may not sound great. They're going to do what? That's the plot of that movie? That's the cast? That guy's playing Batman? Oh, that's ridiculous. Now, why would that team take a tight end in the second round? They traded up to get a center. What are they doing? But then you actually sit down and watch the movie, and you see things play out. You watch the NFL seasons play out, and you realize maybe there is a method to the madness. Maybe it isn't as crazy of an idea as you originally thought. Maybe the movie is pretty good, and that team had a pretty good draft. We'll find out about 3 or 4 years from now. When we come back, that doesn't mean I won't give you my best guesses. Well, as we look at these quarterbacks, which one of these quarterbacks could actually have the best career or have any impact in their career? We'll get to that coming up. The Mara Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Coming up, which one of these quarterbacks could actually have an impact in the NFL? The Falcons and the Panthers both took one. It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll talk about the Falcons draft coming up in about 10 minutes with D. Orlando Ledbetter, who covers the team. But both teams took a flyer on a quarterback late. Which one of these quarterbacks, because by the end we still had about 9 come off the board, which could have the best NFL career? Obviously only Kenny Pickett went in the first round. And it's the first time since 1996 that only one quarterback went in the top 70. If you look back at that 96 draft class, wasn't very good. You can make a case that maybe none of these quarterbacks are going to have an impact. There's a reason why they were drafted when they were. That the media or draft pundits really built up a case for Malik Willis that wasn't there in the eyes of these NFL talent evaluators. But looking back at 1996, Tony Banks was the only quarterback to go in the top 70. He went in the second round at pick number 42 to the St. Louis Rams out of Michigan State. Banks was decent, but he wasn't that great. He bounced around. He was a spot starter here or there. He was on the Ravens, was on the Texans when they first started. Wasn't very special. Then you had Bobby Hoying in the third round to the Eagles, Jeff Lewis to the Broncos. The 96 draft was the one that gave us Danny Cannell to the Giants in the fourth round. Later, he went to the Broncos. He bounced around too. None of these guys were really starting quarterbacks. Spence Fisher was drafted in the sixth round by the Steelers. Mike Cawley in the sixth round by the Colts. You had John Stark, not the basketball player, but John Stark, no S at the end of the name. Go to the Ravens in the seventh round. Kyle Wacholtz, that's how you say it, went to the Packers in the seventh round. In fact, the best quarterbacks from 1996 were the undrafted quarterbacks. Damon Heward was undrafted. He had a long career. You also had Ray Lucas. Originally went to the Patriots. He stayed in the league for a little while. And John Kitna was an undrafted quarterback. And he was in the league for about 15 years. Started for the Seahawks, the Bengals, the Cowboys. So the best quarterbacks of 96, actually the undrafted guys. And those who were drafted weren't all that great. Maybe this year will be the same. We'll try to talk ourselves into some of these guys, but the fact of the matter is maybe they were drafted where they were for a reason because they're just not that good. They're not NFL starting talent. With that said, however, let's look at these guys and try to come up with who could be the best NFL quarterback from this draft class. First, here is Dominique Foxworth giving his sleeper of the draft. Right, Kenny Pickett goes in the first round, so it should be assumed that he would be the best quarterback. He may be the only quarterback worth taking. We'll find out. But then the question becomes, of all these other guys, these other eight quarterbacks that went from rounds three to the end, which one of those guys could actually surprise some teams? Here is Dominique Foxworth with his answer.
This is like, I don't want to say the steal of the draft, but this feels like a steal. Like, this guy's potential starting quarterback in the NFL, which, like, if you have that potential to get that guy in the third round, is a great acquisition, and they're in position so that they can do it again next year if it doesn't work out. So at some point, he's clearly going to – they don't have to rush him out there. We've said a number of times about the Falcons that they've decided to be in rebuild mode. They made that quite clear when they traded away Matt Ryan. So they can take their time to develop him and see if he has anything in this first year. And I think it's a great pick.
I didn't set that up great because I didn't realize he didn't say his name. Desmond Ridder is who Dominique Foxworth was talking about, who the Falcons took as the second quarterback off the board when they selected him in the third round. He thinks he could be the steal of the draft. The Falcons may have just gotten their next franchise quarterback. Then there were the Panthers, a little while later at pick number 94, getting Matt Corral. Now, Ian Rappaport originally reported, and took some heat for this, I guess, but that Corral fell on draft boards or even with the Panthers draft board because of issues with depression and substance abuse. Then this was Ian Rappaport talking about how we got to this point with the Panthers taking Matt Corral.
A couple of things to what you guys talked about. Yeah, they did consider Kenny Pickett strongly at number six. They went with their board. They took the best football player, and they were not as convicted on the quarterbacks as they were on the tackles, so that's one thing. The other thing is Corral had, aside from Pickett, really the best film. This is a guy whose upside they really liked, and once they passed on the quarterback at six, they thought there was very, very little chance they'd have a chance at any of these guys, and then they all slid right into reach, ended up taking a hop up into the third round to take him. Now it's going to get really interesting. Corral may take some time, but we will see how quickly Sam Darnold gets acclimated to Ben McAdoo's offense and if he takes hold of this thing.
Chris Sims called Matt Corral the steal of the draft for him. Chris Sims, who a lot of people may mock or seems like he has ridiculous ideas, he actually has done a really good job nailing the quarterbacks in the draft each and every year. And Matt Corral was his number one quarterback. The scouting report from Chris Sims was insane athlete, quick feet, and the quickest release I've seen from a prospect in years. Awesome arm strength with great accuracy. Needs to put it all together, but it's all there. He is round one worthy for me. So maybe it's the Panthers who got the steal. When you look at these two quarterbacks, for Desmond Ridder and maybe Matt Corral, there's not the pressure right away. That's what happens when you're taking the third round and both teams already have a veteran as a starter. You don't have to come in like Trevor Lawrence and take over week one and have the expectations of being good immediately. These guys will have some time to develop. Probably more so Desmond Ridder because the Falcons are not looking to compete right now. Where the Panthers, you have Matt Rhule that we believe is kind of on the hot seat and a desperate owner and a team that wants to win. For the Falcons, they acknowledge that, yeah, we're kind of rebuilding. Let's give it a year or two. Additionally, Desmond Ridder has been compared to Marcus Mariota, and Marcus Mariota is on the roster, and you have Arthur Smith, who has worked with Mariota before and quarterbacks like that. So the belief is that Desmond Ridder and his profile fits with what Arthur Smith and his offense would like to do. Plus, you have, eventually, hopefully, Calvin Ridley coming back. You'll have Kyle Pitts. And you'll also have your first-round pick, Drake London, who is one of the early favorites to be the Rookie of the Year this season. For Matt Corral in Carolina, they improved the offensive line in the first round. We have no idea when Corral will actually see the field. You do have some weapons, Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore. And most importantly, if healthy, you have a young quarterback's best friend in Christian McCaffrey. Not only to be able to run the football, but to be able to just check it down. Short passes, get in the hands of McCaffrey, a playmaker, and let him go do his thing. He could be your bailout. Once we see Matt Corral on the field, if we see him in a Panthers uniform, you do have some pieces there. Will he have a new head coach by the time he actually becomes the starter in Carolina? We'll see. But when I look at this quarterback draft class, it's very intriguing. You know, even Bailey Zappe, who broke all sorts of records in 1 year at Western Kentucky and goes to the Patriots. Why did the Patriots take a quarterback in the fourth round after taking Mac Jones last year? Only one other team has ever done that in draft history, where they took a quarterback in the top 15 and then the very next year took another quarterback later in the round, but within the first four rounds. Right? So like Kyler Murray is the number one pick the next year, does not count for the Cardinals after they took Josh Rosen. But only two times, this was the second time, a team drafted a quarterback in the top 15 and then the next year took a quarterback later in the draft, but within the top four rounds. It was seemingly an odd fit for New England, but I'm intrigued by Zappe at the next level. Sam Howell may become already the best quarterback on the Commanders roster. Then you had Chris Oladokun, who actually played for Samford in the Southern Conference against the Citadel. Skylar Thompson go to Miami. And Brock Purdy was Mr. Irrelevant going to San Francisco. The one quarterback I did not mention is the one that I would have the highest hopes for. And that would be Malik Willis. Now, look, I think a lot of people are higher on Malik than they should have been. We had conversations about will he go number two to the Lions. He ended up sliding to the third round, pick number 86, and was only the third quarterback taken. But I like the fit in Tennessee because there's not a lot of pressure on Malik Willis either. You have Tannehill under contract for the next couple of years, and eventually they'll work their way over to Malik Willis. You have Derrick Henry, who by the time Malik Willis becomes a starter, maybe Henry isn't the same running back anymore. But you have a team in the Titans that have been number one in rushing attempts since 2010. That's a long time. They've always been about running the football. That helps a young quarterback. And even though they just traded A.J. Brown, right, they drafted another young receiver to try to replace him. It's a bad division for the near future. I think Malik Willis in Tennessee could be the best fit. But there's certainly reasons to be optimistic about Desmond Ridder in Atlanta and Matt Corral in Carolina. Once you get to that point in the draft, why not take a flyer on those guys? This year's NFL draft was really down in ratings, and I think two reasons. Number one, eight teams did not have a first-round pick, so eight fan bases had no reason to really tune in. And number two, we did not have the star power at the quarterback position. And we know the NFL is all about the stars at the quarterback spot. That's why the NFL has changed the rules to try to protect those guys. None of these quarterbacks may work out, but there are reasons to be optimistic about Desmond Ridder, Malik Willis, and Matt Corral going in the third rounds far after Kenny Pickett. We'll talk about the Falcons draft class when we come back with D. Orlando Ledbetter, who covers the team. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show. The things that you might have done were only the good die young. That's what I said.
Only the good die young. Only the good die young. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio as we break down the weekend. That was the NFL draft out in Las Vegas. And joining us now to talk about the Falcons did over the weekend is D. Orlando Ledbetter, who covers the Falcons for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's the Falcons beat writer. You can get to him on Twitter at D. Orlando AJC, and he's with us now. D., good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Luke. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Hey, it's our pleasure. Appreciate the time. Let's dive in with the Falcons draft class from over the weekend. Just first off, overall, and I know it's always too early to probably grade this whole thing, but when you look at what they did over the weekend, as someone who covers the team, do you think they checked those boxes? Are you satisfied with the job the Falcons did this past weekend?
Yeah, you know, they added some players, you know, at positions that they needed, which, you know, is sometimes tricky. You know, you want to always pick the best player on the board, but they got guys that fit what they're trying to do, you know, bigger physical guys on both sides of the ball.
Were you surprised at all? Drake London goes in that first round, pick number eight. Some people believe he'll be the rookie of the year this season. When you look at the Falcons, wide receiver in the first round, did you like that fit to go with the wide receiver and specifically Drake London with the eighth overall pick?
Yeah, it was a good pick. You know, after they explained it, I thought they should have gone with Charles Cross. I had him ready a little bit higher, had the other receivers a little bit higher, Garrett Wilson and Jameson Williams. But, you know, they want a big physical football team, and he was the best of the big receivers, you know. Or they could have got Burks later or George Pickens later. But, you know, he's a big, tough receiver, and you know, think of A.J. Brown of the Titans now, the Eagles, in Arthur Smith's offense. He's going to play that role for the Falcons.
You had Kyle Pitts come in last year who had, you know, a good year, but maybe didn't live up to some of the expectations, at least for the first year as a top five pick. I think Kyle Pitts is going to have a really good career. Now you have London who comes in and already has, you know, in the eyes of at least those in Vegas, the best odds to be rookie of the year. Should the expectation be that Drake London comes in and he's an immediate contributor to this offense this year?
Yeah, Luke, he should be. You know, they didn't have a number one last year. Really got in, you know, was did mental health, had some mental health issues, and then and got suspended. Russell Gage was hurt a little while. So they really didn't have anybody at that spot. You know, they were starting Tajay Sharp, who's not even on the team right now. So he's going to get a bunch of balls. Pitts gets a lot of attention. And it'll be interesting to see how they use Pitts, London, and Cordarrelle Patterson. Somebody should be open, you know, on the offense this year. It shouldn't be like last year where Matt Ryan was holding on to the ball looking for somebody to break open.
Yeah, now when it comes to getting the football to those guys, obviously, as you said, it was Matt Ryan. Now Marcus Mariota comes in as the starter, but they also draft Desmond Ridder in the third round over the weekend. For Ridder, do you like this fit? When you look at the quarterbacks in this draft class, Ridder comes in this Arthur Smith offense. Do you feel like this could be a good pairing for the Falcons if, you know, for taking a flyer at the quarterback position?
Yeah, no doubt. Arthur's been around, you know, a lot of athletic running quarterbacks, you know, going back to his days with the Titans, you know, when they had Jake Locker, you know, he was a tight ends coach then, didn't have the play calling responsibilities yet. And then Mariota. And so Ridder is kind of in that same mode. You know, he was the fastest quarterback at the combine. You know, did a great job at the University of Cincinnati, 44-6. Won a lot of football games for that school and fits well. I just don't think they need to rush him out there and play him before he's ready to go.
Yeah, so what should be the expectations? I believe Mariota's on a two-year deal. So should this be Mariota's team this year and reassess next year? Is Ridder, do you think he's more of like a two-year project? What should the timeline be, or what should Falcons fans expect that timeline to be at the quarterback position now for the Falcons where you have Mariota and Ridder?
Yeah, I think, he said Mariota's going to start out, and, you know, he's going to have to hold out Ridder. He's going to have to keep him out. You know, I would think realistically, you know, if things going bad at some point this year that, you know, Ridder's out there. But until they are, you know, unless they are eliminated from the playoffs early or something, I'm thinking, you know, Mariota and it gets past the Ridder at some point this year.
Talking with D. Orlando Ledbetter, obviously Julio Jones gone, Matt Ryan gone, now Calvin Ridley, as you said, suspended out for at least the year. When you look at the Falcons, new coaching staff, new front office a year ago, they hung in there last year. The analytics, the numbers would tell you that maybe they overachieved. This year, they tore it down a little bit more. When you look at this Falcons team, what should expectations be just for this season? When you look at, you know, number of wins or how competitive this Falcons team could be this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, Luke, you got to be realistic. And, you know, they're in the middle of rebuilding. Anything close to 500 is another good year for them as they build it out. You know, they got to somehow rush the passer. They got to figure out how to, you know, protect the quarterback and set up the running game. You know, they were last 31st in runs and 32 against the pass. So any movement up the charts towards the middle of the pack by this team would be great. You know, the scoring differential was minus 146, which is the second lowest in the league. So that shows the underachieving part or overachieving part, winning so many close games last year. So any improvements against a tougher schedule, 8-9, 9-8, would be a step in the right direction for the Atlanta Falcons.
You mentioned the lack of pass rush last year, just 17 sacks in a 17-game season. They did use their second pick on a defensive end who had almost 10 sacks, you know, for Penn State. When you look at this Falcons team, now that we've had some of the offseason, we've had the draft, what do you still see as the biggest need or issue on this roster for the Falcons?
Yeah, the offensive line. They picked Justin Schaefer in the fifth round, but I thought the line needed to be addressed. They, you know, failed. You know, they couldn't run the ball. They couldn't protect the passer. You can't scheme around the offensive line being bad. And it looks like the coach is thinking they could, you know, yell and scream and get the line better. You know, I still think they got to look to continue to improve that line. via free agency or, you know, cutting waiver wire improvement.
If I were to ask for your best guess, when you look at the entirety of this draft class, who stands out to you the most that maybe is, you know, a little overlooked? They got a running back late. You get a couple of offensive linemen. Who do you think could have the biggest impact from this draft class that, you know, everyone's going to focus on Drake London, even Desmond Ridder? Is there somebody else that the Falcons drafted this weekend that you think could have a good career in Atlanta?
Yes, I do. D'Angelo Malone, the outside linebacker from Western Kentucky. He flashed on the screen. He's from here, so I've been hearing about him in the local circles and so forth. And Chuck Smith, a former Falcon and now a trainer, helped train his kid. So he shot me a text as soon as he got drafted and said, "Hey, D, I think they got a good one here." And so that's the one that I'm keeping my eye on. I got a good tip there from Chuck Smith on him, and want to see how D'Angelo Malone develops as a pass rusher for the Atlanta Falcons.
Couple last things before we let you go. Talking with D. Orlando Ledbetter, who covers the Falcons for the AJC. Let me circle back to that quarterback position. They took Desmond Ridder, as mentioned. Did you have the feeling going into this draft that that was the guy they liked, or was it just that he was the one that, you know, that was there for the taking, or was this the guy all along that the Falcons, if they were going to go quarterback, they wanted Desmond Ridder?
Yeah, they heavily scouted. They sent 14 people up there, the entire offensive staff, the GM, head coach. And, you know, they tried to make it like it wasn't a big deal that they do that for everybody, but they didn't. And, you know, he was their guy clearly, although the locals wanted Malik Willis, the Atlanta kid from Westlake High and Roswell. He had started at Auburn. So we knew about him too, but, you know, they had both of them in. They heavily scouted the quarterbacks, and they went with the guy that, you know, they feel fits their offensive scheme a little bit better.
You mentioned the locals. How should Falcons fans feel today after this weekend? I think we all love the draft because it's it provides some hope for all of us, regardless of who you root for. As Falcons fans wake up today, should they be pleased with what happened these last couple of days out in Vegas?
Yeah, they should be pleased, Luke. They checked all the boxes. They got some, not all of them, but as many as they could. You know, they had a whole lot of open boxes. But they got some pass rush guys, got an offensive weapon, maybe two, maybe three. And, you know, they got some guys from the University of Georgia. So the Falcons fans should be happy. They got two out of 15 Bulldogs who were drafted. So they should be pleased, but they got to be realistic. There's still a lot more work to do here as they try to rebuild the franchise in Atlanta.
Yeah, certainly. He's D. Orlando Ledbetter, covers the Falcons for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Follow him on Twitter at DOrlandoAJC and read his work as we get ready for the football season. They'll be here before you know it with the Falcons. D. Orlando Ledbetter, appreciate the time. Appreciate you joining us. And we'll catch up with you, I'm sure, at some point down the road.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. D. Orlando Ledbetter, who covers the Falcons for the AJC. Appreciate the time. Yeah, the favorites right now in Vegas for Rookie of the Year, Kenny Pickett. Usually that first quarterback is usually highly regarded or favored. And then also Drake London, that first-round wide receiver for the Atlanta Falcons. And it's what I had said going into the draft, that if I was the Falcons, I would take a wide receiver. And I hope that Calvin Ridley from the Falcons, I'm hoping he's reinstated. Don't just assume it's a one-year suspension. It's 1 year till you can apply for reinstation, and then we'll see. For all we know, we may never see Calvin Ridley play again. But if you get Ridley back next year, you get Kyle Pitts, you have Drake London, and now you have Desmond Ridder, who doesn't have the pressure of needing to play this year, suddenly you're building something of interest with that offense and Arthur Smith, an offensive coach running the team, a year from now. This year, they may be really bad. And if they are, you could always go back into that draft and get another quarterback that may be even better than Desmond Ridder. But right now, and you know, Cordarrelle Patterson had a very interesting year this past year, playing mostly as a running back. Got a few pieces that you're building there. But as D said, also the offensive line needs some work. And without an offensive line, it doesn't matter who you have on the outside or what playmakers if you can't get them the football. But the point being, with Pitts, with London, maybe you get Ridley back, now Desmond Ridder, you're building an intriguing group of offensive talent there that you hope will progress over the next couple years for the Falcons. Speaking of which, when we come back to wrap up Hour 1, one player in this draft class said something that I don't think he'll be able to live up to, and I don't think it was very smart. Sometimes I know it's a very exciting moment. You're drafted. You're going to the NFL. You have high expectations. You put a lot of pressure on yourself. You want to win over a fan base. But one prospect said something that I thought was kind of silly over the weekend. We'll get to that next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Coming up, one draftee over the weekend maybe got a little too excited. Probably said something they shouldn't have. It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I guess more than just one, but we'll focus on one. Hey, Justin Ross was just picked up by the Kansas City Chiefs, undrafted free agent. You have to feel for Ross, right? He was projected to be a first-round draft pick, and especially – you look at the way the wide receivers are flying off the shelves these days. If he was healthy, maybe he'd be a top 10 pick. Probably would be after that freshman year. If he kept progressing, he'd probably be the first wide receiver off the board. And then because of the injury issues, he goes undrafted, and then he isn't even scooped up right away. But it seems like the Chiefs could be an intriguing fit for Ross. And I would certainly be willing to take a flyer on him, hoping that, hey, if he does stay healthy, if he does figure things out, he obviously has shown the talent and the potential. He could be a real star for you as an undrafted guy. Another one is N'Kobe Dean, who really fell in draft boards, and everybody's wondering why. Now, what's the issue with him? He's got this shoulder issue, but he chose not to get surgery. Is that the deal?
Shoulder issue a little bit. Decided not to get surgery, and he's also a tad bit undersized. He reminds me, Luke, of Devin Bush. Remember coming out of Michigan? Yeah. He was a little bit shorter, but this guy is an athletic freak, absolute athlete. He covers the field like some safeties and defensive backs do. He's got that kind of speed, Luke. I think he's a steal of the draft.
Yeah, I could certainly see it. You know, he is the leader of that Georgia – that just put the Georgia program in general, 15 guys in the draft, five in the first round. So for him to drop to the third round, which was, for being honest, it was, I guess, kind of funny. When Mel Kiper Jr. on draft night, he's talking about his best – players available, and then they just keep getting like passed over.
It was funny.
Yeah, they were like still all available by the end of the first round, his best available players. But in this case, a lot of people were scratching their heads like, hey, how come Dean hasn't gone yet all the way until the third round to the Eagles? Could be quite the steal for the Eagles. I thought the Eagles had a pretty good draft weekend. Again, we have to wait and see, but just first reaction, I like what they were able to do over the weekend. And then there was Desmond Ridder, who we've been talking about the last couple of segments. When he was drafted, and look, it's an emotional moment, and you're excited, and it's a huge deal for all these guys. Even the guys that don't make it, right, that are going to get cut or they're going to be bust or whatever. When you're drafted to the NFL, that's what you've been working for all these years, and everybody's watching on TV, and you got your family with you, and it's really cool. We'll play the audio later of when Desmond Ridder gets the phone call. I love watching those videos. It's a great moment. But sometimes these guys, they're a little too excited, maybe a little too emotional, and they want to win over a new fan base. And they'll say something that they probably shouldn't. You should always overperform. What is it? What's the first part of
undervalue?
That?
Undervalue? No, that's it? Not it. Yeah.
Why can't I think of this? Under something and overperform. Set the expectations lower is what I'm trying to say. Desmond Ridder, under promise, right? Is that what it is? That doesn't sound right either. I don't know. For some reason, I can't think of that phrase. My mind's locking up. But Desmond Ridder, when he was drafted, he said, I'm not leaving until I get a Super Bowl, about being drafted to the Atlanta Falcons. Oh, no. Don't say that. Now, for years, people can throw that back in your face. Couple of things here. Number one, you're not a first-round pick. Even if Trevor Lawrence were to say that, going to the Jaguars, you'd be like, ooh, that's a bit extreme. But at least he was the first overall pick who has, like, MVP expectations eventually. And we'll be starting week one. We have no idea if Desmond Ridder is going to start at all this year or ever for the Atlanta Falcons. D. Orlando Ledbetter joined us last segment and said that Desmond Ridder is not going to be starting unless they're already out of the playoffs this year. The season's going terribly. But don't expect to see him maybe at all this year. You're a third-round pick. You aren't in the first round. We don't know if you're ever going to suit up. You're a bit of a project. and to get up there and say, I'm not leaving Atlanta until I bring you a Super Bowl. It sounds great. And I'm glad that you have those expectations and, you know, you expect a lot out of yourself and you're very confident. That's a bit much. We don't know if you're ever going to play. You're not a first-round pick. And by the way, it's Atlanta. And the Falcons have not won a Super Bowl. And when they had a chance, this is the city of 28-3. They blew it. You're not going to the New England Patriots where you're being coached by Bill Belichick. You're going to the Falcons with Arthur Smith and a whole lot of nothing around there right now. And Tom Brady in the division for the near future. And I know he's talking about the entirety of his career. It could be 20 years from now, and he finally gets a Super Bowl. But, man, Desmond Ridder, he's going to be 70 years old still holding on to the Falcons, saying, I can't leave yet. I haven't brought you a Super Bowl. That's a big claim to make when you're drafted. It is hard to win Super Bowls.
Under-promise and over-deliver, Luke. I think that's what you were looking for.
That's what I was trying to say.
There it is.
It's not like I talk for a living. Come on. But to make that claim, I'm not leaving until I get a Super Bowl. That is a big claim. And it's going to be held against you. And I don't know if you can achieve that. My point in all this, there's never anything to gain from it. You get the fans all excited and they think, I really like this guy. But then what happens when you don't follow through? And it reminds me of when Ryan Poles was introduced as the GM of the Chicago Bears back in January. And he said in his introductory press conference, we're going to take the North and never give it back. Why say things like this? Now that's the bar you just set. And the Bears are going to be terrible this year. But eventually, Ryan Poles, you better start winning that division and never give it back. You're going to have to be winning it every year. Why put those expectations on yourself? Desmond Ridder, you're a third-round draft pick. Well, now you just put the expectations on yourself that you're bringing a Super Bowl to Atlanta. Good luck. This is a bad team right now. You're a third-round quarterback. I don't know if you're ever going to start a game for the Falcons. Who knows? You're a bit of a project. I love the enthusiasm. But my word of advice to all these kids, you know, just keep the mouth shut. Don't make any promises that people are going to have to hold you to while still being confident. We'll talk about the Panthers draft next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.